Testing. 1, 2, 3. Testing. This is Jean McMillan. Today's date is June 13th, 2023. I am interviewing for the second time Mrs. Mary Louise Gentile Diaz Matos. She's going to talk about a few of the local people as she remembers them from the 1950s to 70s, and then she's going to talk about St. Mary's Church. This is tape 163A. What is your name?
Mary Louise Diaz Matos. My maiden name was Gentile.
And would you give me a description and memories of Margaret Williams?
Margaret Williams lived in the Williams House, which was across the street from the Holly Block, where I grew up until I was age 8. And Miss Williams had a routine every day of walking her front porch 100 times, back and forth, several times a day. And when I was about 4 years old, I remember she invited me to come over and join her. My mother walked me across the street, and we walked back and forth. She held my hand. She chatted. Margaret never had any children of her own, so I think I was special to her because she made an effort to give me juice or a cookie or a cracker when we were finished, and then she never walked me back home. My mother would be watching out the window, and then she would come across the street to pick me up.
What was her hair color?
She was frosted gray, and she wore her hair in a bun at the back of her, on the back of her neck.
What were the color of her eyes?
Well, let's see. I think if I remember correctly, they were a brown. She had very pale skin. She wore dark clothing, comfortable shoes, I remember. And I remember thinking when I was probably 4 or 5 that she wasn't very pretty.
Probably not. Probably not. Who was Nana?
Nana, to me, was Esther Marks, who was the woman who lived across the hall from us in the Holly Block. But she was Miss Williams' cook, caretaker, housekeeper, and a companion. And Nana had a daughter, Helen, who was a nutritionist at Edgewood Park Junior College in Briarcliff Manor.
And there was something about a chestnut tree.
Yes, there was a chestnut tree on the outside of the white fence of Miss Williams' house. And the nice part about it was I'd love to go across the street with my mom, and I would pick the flowers, and then I would make them in different designs and everything. And we would pick up the chestnuts, you know, in the fall and everything. But Margaret never paid any attention to the tree. She actually had a gardener. She had a man who took care of the horses and the carriage. And she would often ride in the carriage on her property, because her property actually went up, now that I think about it, up to Lincoln City Road and beyond.
That's a long way.
It's a long way. The reason why I know it is when my husband and I were looking to buy a house in Lakeville. We went up the mountain where Mr. Reva had built a home, and we could look down. We could see Charlotte Reed's house on Porter Street, and then we could see the lake, and I remember seeing Margaret Williams' house. But at that time, the apartment building had been knocked down and was Bower Park.
Okay. Tell me about Wanda Landowska.
Wanda Landowska was an incredible harpsichordist. She lived up by Emily Miles on Route 44. Yes, right across from Hollywood, the estate of the former governor. And she would walk into the village. She would wear these white flowing capes. She, too, wore her hair pulled back. It was sort of gray with a knob at the back. And very sweet, presents and everything. And as I got older, like I was about seven, I remember, seven or eight, she invited me to come and sit in her garden while she played the harpsichord and the harp. She had a huge harp, and Denise Restute was her companion, who also taught students.
We'll get
her.
To Denise in a minute. What were her eyes, eye color?
I'm not sure. She had a kind of a pinky complexion, I remember. Just a wonderful woman. She just spoke with an accent. She taught me a lot about music, not that at that age that I was absorbing much
of it.
But still, it was important, and I have, somewhere in my collection, I have a picture of her that my mother took of us one day in the garden.
But she must have liked children to invite you across.
Yes, she did.
Good.
She did.
And you had a good story about the swing bridge.
Yes. The swinging bridge was next to what is now, I think, is it Dino's Pizzeria?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it went from that parking lot across the pond to the lake. And that's the way we went to the lake. But the swinging bridge was rotting, so we had to be very careful because some of the planks were missing and the pond was full of snapping turtles.
Yes.
But that eventually was torn down, and, you know, it was a historical site when I think about it. When we moved from the Holly Block, I never went across the bridge again, and I was eight years old then.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, it was scary, but I remember Timmy Barr, who's a friend of my brother's, and his brother, Wally Barr and Mickey Barr, they love to get on the bridge and jump up and down and scare the girls.
Oh, sure. Yep. Well, that was fun. That was
yes.
fun.
Yes.
Tim Barr, Wally Barr, and who was the third?
Mickey. Wally Barr was the oldest of the boys. Mickey, which was short for Michael, was the middle, and Timmy was the youngest. Their father was the local dentist.
What did Denise look for like? What was her hair? Denise Restute.
Denise wore her hair in a knob also. I don't know whether it was part of the time, but her hair was long. That I remember, because one time she was drying it in the sun. I was washing it.
Yeah, she was younger than
she was
longer.
So oh, yes.
Would her hair have been brown?
It was brown, had some flecks of gray in it. She was just a wonderful, warm person.
Oh, yes.
She didn't wear capes. But
no
she,
cape?
No cape. No cape.
I took lessons from Denise for 12 years. So.
And there was another man, I think he was from Argentina, that took lessons from Wanda, who performed at Carnegie Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Was Denise related to Wanda?
No,
just a friend.
Just a friend. She actually was a student of Wanda's, if I remember correctly.
She was.
And then stayed on as Wanda aged, stayed on, took on some of her students, which were basically foreign students. I don't remember anybody local during my time.
Yeah.
That took lessons from her.
She still had... When I was taking lessons from Denise, Denise had a couple of pupils that were coming from New Haven and Bridgeport, far distances,
right.
too.
Yeah.
Connie Smith's disappearance. What can you tell me about that?
I can tell you that I lived on Route 44 at the time. I was 16 years of age, and it was a devastating event for the people of the town of Lakeville. The story had it that she fell the night before, might have had a subdural hematoma, became confused and disoriented, and just wandered off. And I remember that when she came out of Camp Sloan, she made a right-hand turn on Indian Mountain Road, stopped at the home of Mrs. Walsh, which was at the intersection of Indian Mountain Road and 112. And she asked directions for the center of town. And the reason why I know this is because Joan Walsh was my babysitter. She was the daughter of Mrs. Walsh. And her brother Bill Walsh and her sister Patty Walsh, as I grew older, became friends of mine. And they remember, they told me the story. And for some reason, she went up the hill, and after that, nobody saw her. Yeah. They don't know whether or not somebody stopped, offered her a ride, whether she wandered into the woods, or... But I do remember for weeks that people were volunteering to look in the woods. They remember they drained the lake, not only Lake Winnascapomet, but the lake...
They dragged it.
And then they even did Mudge Pond. And with no results, they tested the woods in the area, because there were a lot of woods at that time.
Oh,
it wasn't quite as built up. But nothing.
You said there were helicopters, too.
Helicopters as well. And it was, I remember a group of us were at the lake that afternoon, and it was like, she was our age.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It was very frightening. What could have happened to this girl? And I often think of her because she disappeared in the month of July, the middle of July.
56.
56. Because I was 16 years of age.
Okay. Who were the Knowltons?
The Knowltons, Don Knowlton and his wife, were the original founders of the Woodland restaurant.
And what were their names?
It was Don, and I can't remember what her Mrs. Knowlton's name was.
Okay.
But it was like a breakfast lunch place. It was a little more high-end than a deli.
Okay, yep.
But it was the stools at the bar, there were some tables. It was a burger joint.
Right.
It was a burger joint. But at that time, there was none in town, so it became very popular. I got to know their son, Bill Knowlton, and their daughter, who was a nurse, and was the nurse at Sharon Hospital, had a family. And I can't remember how many years they were in business, but I do remember when I went off to college and nursing school that they sold it to Carol Peters, whose parents owned the Interlaken Inn.
When did they sell it?
You went off to college in 1958. So it was probably in the early 60s. And then Carol converted it into a very elegant restaurant.
Well, it wasn't elegant in 67 the first time I was there.
Yeah.
It was, as you say,
it was,
elegant and expensive.
Mr. Knowlton's son, Bill, went into the Air Force, loved country music. And I remember, one of the things I remember when the Knowltons owned it was that Bill would play that awful music. So people complained. You know, elderly people didn't, up in this area,
it was not their kind of music.
No.
Carol Peters' parents, do you remember their names?
I only remember them as Mr. and Mrs. Peters.
Okay, but they had the Interlaken.
Yeah, they owned the Interlaken.
And there was a connection between Carol Peters
and George Ernst.
You told me about a plaque.
There was a plaque on the back stool, the back bench at the Woodland in his memory when he passed on. They were good friends, never married. He owned Shagroy at the time. I think he had a lot to do with providing Carol with the produce and everything for the restaurant.
What did he look like?
George was very distinguished, dark hair, had a mustache. Just a nice looking man. I don't ever remember if he married or not. I don't think he ever did.
No, he didn't.
No.
He was killed at age 51 in a rafting accident.
Yes. He was also, unfortunately, got involved in some drug problems.
Okay. All right, let's move on to St. Mary's Church.
Okay.
And this is where you bring out your notes.
I bring out my notes. I did some research on this. And St. Mary's Church actually has quite a history. It's very interesting because, you know, when you're young, you don't pay too much attention to things. But I was very excited to find that St. Mary's Church was actually founded by the miners in the town, you know, the ore miners and, you know, the local people who lived on Mount Riga at the time. And it was originally the masses were said in private homes. And then it moved on down to the center of town. And the property was bought by Father Lynch from the Congregational Minister of Salisbury.
When?
In January 16th, 1876.
Okay.
And it was St. Mary's Church was built by local people. The ore miners and the iron workers, donations from the people in the town. And
well, now, you told me that he bought the property, but the church was dedicated January 16th, 1876. But that isn't when he bought the property. He bought the property beforehand.
Beforehand, he bought the property in... I know that the first mass was July 4th, 1849,
and
the ore mines.
Yeah, at the Davis ore mine.
At the Davis ore mines.
And then it was
St. Patrick's Church was built in Falls Village by Father Peter King, by Father Peter Kelly,
in 1853.
Right.
But you don't have a date for when Father Lynch bought the property.
It was somewhere between. I'd say in the late 50s, early 60s, because the property
because it had to be built
and everything. Yeah.
Okay. And
it was dedicated on January 16th, 1876.
And that was still Father Lynch, wasn't it?
Still Father Lynch.
And then it was rededicated.
It was rededicated in
1903.
And then again in 2015.
Tell me about the school.
Oh, the school. Now, these I remember. It was originally in 1923, it was a convent. It was the only time there were nuns here. Never a school like they have in the cities, like that went with the churches and everything.
Yeah,
the parochial schools. But there was a summer retreat for girls. It was called the Lakeville Manor on Route 41, and it was two houses, and the girls would come in the summer, the end of June until Labor Day weekend, and they participated in local sports. They would come to the lake, learn how to sail, learn how to swim and everything, but they attended Mass every morning at 7:45. You could see them walking up the hill. Then they would go back, I remember, to the manor for breakfast, and then they would come over to the lake and have swimming lessons with Jeanette Axelby. It was in, I'm trying to think, unfortunately, they sold it, the Lakeville Manor, to a contractor who has since made it into apartments.
Right.
They're very beautiful apartments.
The manor closed. In 68?
In 68.
The school had closed in 1920?
1920, yes.
All right. And the church had been renovated?
The church was renovated, I can remember...
1975?
75, 76. You know who did it was Mr. Hussey, who passed away recently, Nora Hussey's husband.
Emmett's father.
Emmett's father. here in the late 70s after my parents died, and we spent the summers here from 1977 to 1992. And I remember Mr. Hussey and his sons, Emmett and I remember the other boy's name.
That's all right.
They did a lot of the work with the father. I remember the scaffolding and everything.
There was a special mass in 2015.
Yes. It was an anniversary mass.
How many years?
125, I think it was. Okay. I remember my first priest was Father Lawler.
Yes.
Who was like a sourpuss, I mean, to say it.
And who followed?
Father Gresh. And then Father Murphy.
Yep.
And then Father Forte.
Who taught catechism?
Catechism was taught by Mary Godress and her brother Ernie.
And what time? Well, what time was it? What?
After school. We used to have to walk down the hill. We'd all walk in a group.
Yeah.
Walk down the hill, through the center of town, and then up the hill. And we had to memorize the Baltimore Catechism.
And it was held...
It was held, we would get there, the school got out at 3 o'clock, it was about from 3:30 to 4:45.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing was, parents didn't pick you up or drive you then. You walked. Didn't matter where you walked to. And for me, it was to walk down the hill, up the hill, and then along Route 44, there was no sidewalks, to my house. And from my house on the main road, to the central school was a mile, and then from there to the church.
You were had plenty of exercise.
Yes, plenty of exercise.
Before we close, is there something that you would like to add that we haven't covered?
I just feel that St. Mary's Church has always been a beacon for the tri-state area, because I remember climbing Bash Bish, and you could see the steeple for miles and miles around, and it was like God was calling to us. And with all of the hullabaloo, with the shortage of priests and things, and the fact that they wanted to close St. Mary's, and even the merger was kind of hard to swallow with St. Joseph's and Immaculate Conception, but now they're getting two Franciscan priests, which everybody is very excited about. And I think that they're going to be introduced this weekend.
Oh, wonderful.
They will, from what I understand from what Judy's emailed me, they will be sharing their duties in Winsted and St. Mary's, which will be very nice.
Thank you so very much.
You are very welcome. Lakeville is a very special place.